As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on The Athletic Podcast Network. This is Nerd or She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. I'm Dave Dufour, and that means it's Nerder. She Wrote. Joining me as they do each and every week, Mo DeKeel and Seth Partnow. What's up, fellas?
Chilling, Dave. It's a nice sunny day here in LA just before the rains are gonna start coming down again.
Don't get me
started. Seth, you don't know anything. You don't know anything about this.
You know, I did not move to Southern California for this cold, wet winter that I got.
You brought it.
I think I did. It was as much rain as they've had in my lifetime. The first winter I spent in California.
Dave, I'm gonna actually clue you. We're actually having a meeting and deciding to send you back. Like, there's just so you know, there's a vote going on. So don't get too comfortable.
I'll be the first person to move from Texas to California and then get kicked out. But I apologize. But the drought is over. You guys are welcome. Seth, how's it up there? I'm assuming still freezing in Milwaukee.
No, it's above freezing, but it's gray.
So, yeah. Well, yeah. It's sunny here today, which is nice. It's a nice sunny day in California, but unfortunately, the injuries in the NBA have cast a pall across the league. Kevin Durant got hurt in warmups yesterday. We're recording this Thursday, the 9th of March, and it feels like we just can't have nice things anymore, guys. We barely got to see Kevin Durant as a Phoenix Sun, and he gets hurt in warmups. So what do you guys, I guess there's other injury news as well. Let's just lay it all out there. News this morning, Steven Adams received a stem cell injection in that knee. He's out for at least the remainder of the regular season. And we're awaiting word on the MRI from Luka Doncic and his injured thigh that's been bothering him for a couple weeks. He's been hampered. We've all talked about him looking a little slower, a little bit worse for the wear here lately.
He had to leave
the game in the middle of the third last night with that thigh issue. So once again, guys, we're coming down to the wire. Playoffs about a month away, and injury luck seems like it's, you know, playing its cards as it usually does.
Same as it ever was. And this is sort of the fact that it seems like more teams are being sidetracked by this. This is a function of, you know, the start of the year. How many teams can we say, if things break right, ... You know, there's 12 of them this year. Usually there's 5 or 6, maybe. There being 12 of them, well, things are not breaking right for some. And the absence of things not breaking right is things breaking right for Denver. And, you know, we have this argument all the time. Anytime someone tries to, like, asterisk the title. Like, every champion ever has gotten lucky. And in this case, the luck is not being one of the teams that had your best player roll his ankle in pregame warmups.
Yeah. I mean, first off, freaking injury in that sense, just right there with KD getting hurt. But this is the season. This is part of it, you know. This is also part of the reason why I think we should have a shorter season. Whole other conversation for another time. But I think this is a product of it. And this is every year. And that's part of it. That's why everybody's, when people go like, oh, they won this championship by luck. Every championship was won by luck. There's a degree of luck in all of this, whether avoiding an injury or small, simple things are part of that. And I think that's the situation we're at. That's kind of why I'm so impressed by LeBron's 8 finals runs, the Warriors, 5 finals in a row. There's a reason why that doesn't happen very often, because of things like this, a wet spot, a unfortunate landing on somebody's ankle and things like that. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, into winning the finals. And this is just, unfortunately, what we're going into at the end of this season.
And even the Warriors, though, had bad injury luck along the way. I mean, you mentioned a wet spot. I mean, Steph Curry, obviously, the, you know, Monta Ellis sweat puddle where he injures his knee. And I think they're going to win the title that year if it wasn't for that.
Well, they would have won it if Draymond was able to keep his hands to himself. But a whole other issue
there,
too.
Right. Well, a little, you know, different kind of injury. And then, of course, the Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson injuries in the finals. But, you know, look, we kind of have been, you know, on this all year long. This year is wide open. A lot of teams felt that way. I think that's why the trade deadline looked the way it did. And you could see, you know, teams take, even the Lakers, like they had such a great trade deadline. And had LeBron not gotten hurt, you look at the standings and you look at the teams ahead of them right now, I wouldn't say that they couldn't make them their way out of the play-in if he had been there. I mean, it's that tight. So this is obviously going to change everything.
That was definitely in play for the Lakers. And to be honest, still in play. They're only 2 games away from the Clippers, who are at 6 at the time of this. And the thing about the standings, especially in the West right now, every night it's just musical chairs. It's a whole different flow of who's in and who isn't. You know, it's flying around in a way that's pretty wild. So if AD is going to continue to play the way he's playing, and that's a dude that's also somebody we should watch for potential injuries down the road, knock on wood, they can fly out right into the 6th spot right now.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Pelicans dealing with, you know, missing Zion still. He's going to be reevaluated again in a couple weeks, which I know we a couple weeks ago said we probably don't expect to see him again, but.
Now we. Seth asked the question, and you and I both didn't want to answer. Seth was already in the, hey, he's not playing the rest of the season mode. And he's, you know, he's already sharp and on it.
Yeah. You know, you look and they're currently in one of those play-in spots, but Oklahoma City doesn't necessarily want to make the play-in. So we've got that whole game to keep an eye on. But we were originally going to do our lead segment on all of the budding and building and sort of, really rivalries. Good and heated rivalries. And all of a sudden, when you look, I mean, these 4 teams are kind of intertwined, Memphis and Phoenix, Dallas, Golden State. There's so much back and forth. There's so many storylines, you know, cross-matched between the 3. And as we sit here today, only Golden State is healthy, finally.
It always works out for those Warriors, damn it. Just kind of like, and Steph's been injured. There's a whole lot of questions. Wiggins has been out for a long time. We don't know when he's coming back. It's you know, they're dealing with their own stuff. But this sucks because it does ruin the chance of, we really looked like we were going to have some serious budding rivalries just in the first round, you know, the way the standings looked yesterday. And again, it changes constantly, but it looked like we were going to get Memphis and Golden State in the first round and Phoenix Dallas in the first round. That's what we were all kind of hoping for and wanted. And I think that was the news yesterday, but of course, you know, the fates had different plans and now we're not going to have so much rivalries.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've got about, 20 games left, something around there, maybe slightly less than 20 games left. If we could wind up with Memphis, Golden State, and then Phoenix, Dallas in the first round, man, it would make my life easy. You know, rematches, this is like the old Bulls having to go through the Pistons. I love this stuff.
And I have a fun idea for the Warriors, free idea here. I don't think they would do it. If you haven't already seen the clip floating around from Volume Sports of Draymond Green basically going at Dylan Brooks line for line, everything that quote that Brooks said, that should be their pregame intro. Like, you know, the video that teams do before the game, it should just be that every time they play Memphis, as long as Dylan Brooks is there, and create that kind of animosity. But we're getting there with rivalries. I think, you know, people want it. I think we're going to, close to injuries are going to suck a little bit, but I think we're going to get some stuff coming from that, even in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. It just, you know, again, the KD thing, coming off the knee issue that he missed a bunch of time with. I mean, this guy was playing at an MVP level, and KD is able to come back from these injuries and somehow look like he never missed any time. I'm not sure that there's any player that can come back and look 100% the way that KD does. So, I mean, luckily he has that going for him. If he has to miss a week or 2 weeks, hopefully it's not a lot of downtime. And his game is plug and play in Phoenix. I mean, we've seen what they're already able to do with him offensively. Devin Booker, in a game without Kevin Durant, puts up 44. And we talked about him having all these easy 50s just sitting there waiting for him with Kevin Durant. But when you got a guy like Booker who can score, he can take on that scoring load, so you can ease KD back in the lineup when he comes back. I just wonder, you know, is there enough time for Phoenix in particular to build the sort of chemistry that you need to win a title? You know, like, I'm trying to think of, there's definitely nothing in recent memory where someone, you know, number one, a swing piece like KD doesn't get traded every trade deadline. But when has a team ever made a trade for a KD-like guy, let's say a top 15 guy, and just been able to implement them, build chemistry, and then go on to have playoff success? It would be the first time, right?
95 Rockets is probably the closest. Like, depending on what you think of Drexler at that point in his career.
Yeah.
But again, it's like the sample size of you know, MVP level players don't get traded in season. So it's sort of like it's a parallel to the discussion of, you know, okay, the Suns can't win because no team has ever done this. Well, the Nuggets can't win because no team with a center defensively is questionable as Jokic. Okay, but none of those guys have been Nikola Jokic. So it's like we're off the map regardless here. And I'm not sure how much that sort of past precedent really has to say about, you know, the situation we find ourselves in.
I would actually equate this more to the Pau Gasol trade, who recently got his jersey retired in LA. I think that's the kind of deal. Now, he's not, obviously, KD's a different level of player than Pau, but that was the piece that pushed the Lakers getting into the finals that year, and they were a middling team at that point. I've always kind of thought this trade had more Pau feelings to me than anything else with that. I'll say this though about KD, and this is kind of the thing here. I'm all about chemistry, continuity, all of that matters. KD is the most pliable, easiest dude to plug in, and that's really a credit to him too. Like, just look at it this way: in the first game, it looked like they already had something, right? And it was Charlotte, I get all that, but even the first couple, like, we felt confident with everything that they had, the flowing that they had going, and everything about that. That's a credit to KD being able to just slide right in and get into the spots for the team and everything that goes with it. So for me, it sucks, and I think it is a setback for the Suns, depending on how long KD is going to be out. But I don't know how much of a setback. Other teams, it's a massive problem. The Mavs trying to figure out Luka and Kyrie together, Luka being out, really hurts the team, because that's going to take longer to figure out in that instance. And I think that's kind of the difference in those scenarios.
What's like the chef's knife version of a Swiss Army knife? Like, a Swiss Army knife is like a little, you know, pocket, pretty cheap, probably. You can do all these different things,
though. But it's not good, and like, at any one thing.
Yeah, but Durant is like, is that what? Like,
yeah.
If, you know,
the
if, like,
best
the
ever Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
Like, this is the elite.
Yeah, like any skill set you can think of aside from if you actually need someone to do like point guard things. Like, I think that's the only like offensive initiate. Like, KD can be an offensive initiator if he is your offense. He's not necessarily the guy who's going to like dime people up all the time and stuff like that. So yeah. Other than that, like anything you need him to do, he can do. And so that's why it becomes like the chemistry becomes less of a thing. It's sort of like, you know, as long as everyone else is filling the things they need to do, which that because they're more limited, they're already doing the things they can do. Like Mo said, that just makes it a little easier. It's easier with KD than it would be. Like the bigger worry there is more his conditioning than the integration.
Although again, he has in his career has tended to come back and be about 100% when he's on the court. I mean, he apparently keeps himself in pretty good shape. I mean, definitely stays light, which is important for a guy his size. But you know, one of the things I think with KD that kind of gets lost in the shuffle because of like the physical stuff with him stands out, you know, being 7 feet tall, being able to handle like that, but he's a high IQ guy, you know, and his passing comes from that IQ instead of being more like a point guard where he's, you know, pounding the leather off the ball or running pick and roll. A lot of his passes are just, you know, make a quick decision with it, or his arms are incredibly long. And you see him throw some of these passes that I just don't think most guards can do, right? Yeah, it's almost like, I'm not going to compare it to Jokic because the style is different, but it's similar. You know, you've got this, you know, the 7 foot sort of field of reference there, and then the long arms. He's able to throw these passes over the top. And I think throwing weak side corner passes, I mean, he's right up there with Jokic. He's really, really talented. So yeah, I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about him physically as long as he's going to be on the court. It's just how, you know, what's the ankle going to keep him out? How long is the ankle going to keep him out? Because if he has to miss the rest of the regular season, that cuts their chances in the playoffs just because they don't have the reps. No matter how good he is, and maybe he's just the ultimate rising tide on that team because the talent level is already so high. But I worry about chemistry. You know, we talk about this with the Clippers a lot, but those guys, they play a more individual style of basketball, so maybe the chemistry is even more important for them. But I do think with some of the complicated pick and roll schemes that they're going to want to get into in the playoffs, they need KD out there for the reps.
The other mild worry is even if he's able to get back on the court and there is some lingering effect, is they need, like, the offense is one thing. They need, like, in the past, Durant has been an all-world defender in the playoffs. He's been, like, you know, elite rim protector, has guarded the ball, has done all that. This team is going to need that from him at some point. And if the ankle is still tender, if it compromises his lateral movement, if it compromises his ability to recover and contest shots at the rim, I think that is going to be a huge detriment to them.
And we should also mention, they can still fall in the standings. You know, they're only three games above Golden State to have home court in that series and so on. You know, there was a chance for a while they could climb. We thought maybe it's possibly as high as two because nobody but Jay King believes in the Kings. And I thought that was an important, you know, kind of thing there. And now it kind of changes the complexion a little bit in the standings with just how long is he out and how that, again, changes that whole musical chairs of the standings.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, I mean, and they're only a couple of games outside of the two seed. And they're still a decent basketball team without Kevin Durant. So they could move up while he's out, you know. All right, so that's kind of the West picture, and the injuries are sort of coloring everything right now. In the East, all the teams are starting to get healthy. We all have agreed that the Eastern playoffs is going to be a bloodbath. We also all agree that the Eastern Conference should be favored to win the title. At least I think we do. Don't let me speak for you guys if I'm wrong here. With Milwaukee and their recent huge winning streak, Chris Middleton getting healthy, Giannis looking amazing. Boston getting healthy again, although Robert Williams in and out of the lineup right now. The Knicks, huge winning streak. Cleveland turning it on. They had a big win against Miami. And then we've talked about Philly and the run that they've been on since the start of the new year. I figured it was a good time to take a look at sort of the tiers in the East, the power rankings. Now, I think that we all agree
Seth
Boston.
Did Seth pay you for saying tiers?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Boston and Milwaukee are the top two teams in the East. I think we all agree there. And even when Boston has not looked great in the last few weeks, we can point to the reasons why. I can say it's an injury thing, a personnel issue. Milwaukee has just, to me, looked like the best team in the league for the last month. I mean, I don't know how they don't make the finals. But the other three teams are interesting. Philly, Harden has looked amazing. Embiid is at an MVP level. Obviously, Cleveland, who we've been on since last year, and Evan Mobley's defense is just, it's hit another stratosphere, right? And then the Knicks are playing really solid basketball. Their defense has been pretty good. Their offense is shaky, but it's been effective. So how are you guys feeling about the East?
I don't believe in the Knicks. I think their offense is very based on tough shot making.
Mo's got a stat for that.
And we've kind of seen that turn into a pumpkin in the playoffs before. And I worry about them defensively, frankly. Like if Mitchell Robinson is banged up or in foul trouble, I don't know how they ever end up stopping any of the powerhouse East teams.
I'm actually working on a piece that's going to be coming out over the weekend on the Knicks. And I just think in my research, I was surprised to see that they were 30th out of 30 teams, 30th in assists per game. And it's everything is so isolation. And what's fascinating, Seth, is they're actually running offense. They're actually running offense. And to Tibbs' credit, like, he's done a good job with some of the sets they've put in, really takes advantage of guys. But then everything just ends into an isolation, and it's, I'm going to do it on my own now. And that's really one of the problems, especially in crunch time. And I think that ends up being a scenario there that I worry about. I think they can win a series if they play Cleveland. I think that's a toss-up, and I think that's a close series right there, and really depending on who has home court. A lot of guys, a lot of inexperience really on both sides. With that, I know the Knicks made the playoffs 2 years ago, but still, for some guys, didn't play as big a role. The one thing I will give the Knicks a ton of credit is they are playing their young guys, which is something we've been screaming about for 2 years now, and they're getting a lot of valuable minutes from them. I think they have a chance to really kind of come up on a team like Cleveland, but that's about it. I don't look at them as a contender at all in that sense, and it's because Seth said, like, their shot profile is really dependent on isolation and a lot of offensive rebounds.
And the offensive rebounds, especially, like, that is more of a bum hunting strategy than a playoff team, because, you know, you're going to live on offensive rebounds versus the Bucks.
No, yeah, the
Sixers.
I don't think they can beat any of the top three, right? And I think, you know, their chances, let's get Cleveland in the first round, try to get home court, because they're right in the mix to try to steal home court from Cleveland and try to get out of the first round. That's a massive success for them. And to be honest, I think the season's already a success because they got in Tibbs on the program of playing the young guys. And the young guys are providing actual results for them.
Also, I hope that teams take note of trading first round picks for guys like Josh Hart is good. And you should do that if you're that high level connector is gonna do a lot of different things. He's gonna defend, do things on offense. Like, this is the kind of trade that if you're a contending team and you have your first round pick next year, you should never actually make that selection, because you should have traded for that year's version of Josh Hart.
See, now that's the thing that I think Cleveland's missing. They're missing that connective guy.
Yeah, they don't have that first round pick anymore.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah.
They needed that to get Mitchell.
But that's one of the things, like, I think for them this summer, that's who they have to try to find. Who's that fifth guy that's the connector you know, obviously for them, they need some positional size on the wing. They need a lot of stuff. But the connector is a big deal for Cleveland, and especially come playoff time.
Has Okoro shown he's I don't want to say he's a tease, but he seems like he shows just enough that you think maybe he could grow into that. And
the shooting has been so much better, not just from a result standpoint, but he's not hesitant. Yep. And you know, I know we've beat this, you know, to death essentially with PJ Tucker and how being a willing shooter matters more than making it. You have to make it at a certain point, but Okoro has been making it. But the bigger thing is taking them, but it's still just he's a stationary piece in the offense. He's not a guy that, you know, he's not the best at attacking closeouts. He's not the best at, you know, back cutting and the things that you need out of a guy to actually create some space for you.
The Okoro piece there, Seth, like, yes, you want to see him develop and continue there. It's tough to be like, we're going to be a contender with a maybe. Maybe he can get there, yep. Right? And that's the concern with all that. But the guy that's most important, and he's been coming on really strong, is Evan Mobley.
Yep.
He's been a lot more physical with the ball, the way he's attacking. There was a clip in the game against Miami where he literally just gave Bam a nice little shoulder bump and then went around Bam for an and one. Like, that was those types of plays from Mobley are the things you need to see more of. Yes, his shooting needs to come along. That's not going to happen this season. It's just don't count on it this season. You get a three from him, it's a prayer and be happy about it. But what he's being much more physical when he has the ball down low, that's going to be an important piece for them kind of going forward. And for this year's playoffs, that will matter and make the difference. And if he could bump guys like that, I saw him do something like that to Giannis. I saw him do something like that to Grant Williams, who's granted like half his size. But, you know, bullying guys like that, that's a big piece for the Cavs going forward in the playoffs. And I think that's something to just kind of keep an eye on because he's really come on strong after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I think I think he's done a pretty good job. Now, he's not shooting the three, but I think he's done a pretty good job of working the dunker spot and relocating. So giving up the ball, relocating, getting into the paint and getting some of these little push shots and floaters. I mean, when you look at his numbers, well, a lot of people are like, oh, well, where's the second year, you know, progression? But when you look at his numbers, look, they added Donovan Mitchell. Darius Garland's usage didn't go down, right? Someone's usage is going down to add Donovan Mitchell. He's like a 30% usage guy. Well, Evan Mobley's usage has gone down a little bit, but his numbers have basically stayed the same. So his production level, you know, in aggregate is about the same as last year with fewer touches. And they're not like, it's not like they run the offense through him at any point in the game. He's getting the stuff on the margin. So I think, like you said, like his biggest, he can grow offensively, but what he's doing defensively is really the key to them. To have Mobley and Jared Allen as your back line is a luxury that does any other team. I mean, I guess Milwaukee has two guys like that. Boston has two guys like that. And Cleveland.
And when healthy. Boston.
Here's the difference is you're watching a game and, you know, maybe semi-transition or a switch happens or a scramble or something like that. And you end up with a wing guy like faced up on Mobley or Jared Allen. Like maybe Robert Williams when he's healthy, you're like, yeah, no, it's fine. But you look at you Brook Lopez, even Giannis, like if he's matched up against like a good two guard. You maybe need to rotate some help that direction. Just like, it's fine. They got this. And you never, I think that's just such a luxury from a defensive standpoint. Now, the unfortunate side of that is if those guys are switched on the perimeter, then you've got Darius Garland and right. Donovan Mitchell under the basket.
All right.
But even them, like when Mo and I watched the Cavs Heat game, like the fact that those guys are battling, like Darius Garland's never going to be a great defensive player. But there's situations like he gets switched off and he's guarding Jimmy Butler under the basket. They try to dump the pass down. And instead of just like conceding and taking a foul or something like that, he battles to the point where he can get his hand in and tip the ball away. And now Jimmy Butler's got the ball at 12 feet instead of 6 feet. And you've got a chance defensively. And just doing that is so important.
Well, for years, we hammered Donovan Mitchell for his lack of defense when he was playing in front of Rudy Gobert. And I got to say, he does compete more and more often playing in Cleveland. But then again, I mean, I think it's just an easier environment for him to compete in. Let's just put it that way.
I did a one mo thing early in the season on Donovan Mitchell's defensive effort with everything that he had going on. But I do want to, and Dave, I'm going to hijack the pod now. Sorry. Oh, I'm taking here over here for a second. This is what I really want to talk about in the East. Sorry, Philadelphia fans. We talk about you at nauseam, and let's just be honest. You're the prove it to us in the playoff team. Okay, all of it. We think you're really good. You need to prove it to us in the playoffs. Harden needs to prove it. I got a question for you. Did the Celtics peak too soon? They started the regular season on fire and killed it and destroyed everything. And my real question is, did the Celtics peak too soon throughout it, in that instance? Because now they're struggling. They're not defending as well. Yes, they have injury problems, and their big man rotation is kind of screwed up. Everybody's kind of coming in. Well, should Marcus Smart not play as much? And should it be Derek White playing instead of Marcus Smart? And all of those things. They got schooled by the Knicks twice in a week. And, you know, in one of those games, no Jalen Brunson. It's and to be fair, in one of those games, no Jalen Brown. But the question is, did the Celtics peak too soon?
I mean, I think the health thing is so big for them, right? Robert Williams is not, even when he's been quote unquote healthy this season, he hasn't looked like Robert Williams, you know, world destroyer from last year.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started. Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
So I think that that's a big deal. Their offense still falls apart late in games, right? Like they're undisciplined when it comes to sticking to their plan. They will run their offense for three quarters and then abandon it in the fourth. I don't know how do you get this team to not do that? They've been doing it for 5 years, right?
Like three
different coaches, and they've done this with different personnel. When Brogdon's out there, it's a little bit more organized, but it's still, you know, they're not closing games with Brogdon all that often. I mean, I think that they should close with Derek White to get that organization on offense. And his defense, it's not that much of a drop-off from Marcus Smart. But in particular, you can cover for that. Whereas on the offensive end, Marcus Smart, bit of a hesitant shooter, to be honest with you, a little reckless as a playmaker sometimes. And frankly, just not as good as Derek White. Derek White is an excellent pick-and-roll ball handler. And that can create opportunities that they just aren't going to get when they have these guys standing around trying to isolate. So I would say maybe they peaked too early because offensively they were just so hot, they were unbeatable. But we know what the defensive ceiling of this team is, and it's best defense in the league. So if Robert Williams could get back, I mean, I still think that they could get there. But you might be right about this season.
I think just zooming way out, the two takeaways are, everything you just said, Dave, like, they kind of are who we thought they were in some ways. Like, you mentioned Philly being a team that needs to prove in the playoffs. Like, frankly, I think Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, insofar as not having that sort of their offense being the other team's best offense, which cost them dearly in the playoffs, their bad offense turning into good offense for the other team. But in terms of they had a little wobble, teams have little wobbles. The fact that their wobble coincided with the Bucks winning 16 straight is making it seem more extreme than it's like that. You know, the Bucks made up a lot. Well, yeah, you win 16 straight games, you're going to make up some ground. And just those things happening to coincide probably makes it feel starker than maybe it should.
I wouldn't even say, like, the Bucks went on a 16-game win streak and only have a 2-game lead on Boston. Like, that's actually kind of impressive on Boston's end of able to withstand that. You know, a team goes on a 16-game win streak, you feel like, okay, we might be out of this completely in that run for the first seed. I think my one I want to push back a little bit on Derek White versus Marcus Smart, because I don't think that's the argument. I think it's actually Derek White versus Grant Williams. And should they play smaller more often? I know Smart's not really playing as well as he did last season, but they were only successful last season because of Marcus Smart, right, to a degree in how he played. And that's Derek White can't do what Marcus Smart did last season. They need Marcus Smart to tap into what he did last season. Can he? No idea, right? Maybe that was a one-off type season and just the circumstances that led to that. But I think that's going to be the situation for the Celtics, you know, and everybody who's, you know, tired of Marcus Smart with all that stuff. He's kind of the heart and soul of that team. He's kind of their Draymond to a degree in that, you know, he's the guy that kind of keeps pushing everybody and leads a little bit. And I think you can't put him to the bench and you can't do it in close games. I think you need him out there. And I'm not the biggest Marcus Smart guy. It kills me when I have to defend him and stuff. But like, I think it's a question of, can Grant Williams be out there?
Yeah.
Because you saw that in that game against the Knicks. Emmanuel quickly tore them up, and they just kept getting switches, and all of a sudden, Grant Williams ended up on quickly, and then quickly just said, ooh, lunchtime. And I think that was one of those things there, and I think that's going to be the biggest question for them is, how much can they get from Grant?
It's an interesting, we talked about Robert Williams not looking the same as last year. Part of the reason why they were able to do those Grant Williams lines so much last year is he was like very good in those spots when he got switched out onto like smaller, quicker guys. And the fact that that hasn't been as good this year, like that's not as big a detriment as Robert Williams, now Horford just not playing. But I think that, you know, losing that kind of size and shooting because you can't get the switchable defense out of it, that hurts them a little too. So, you know, I think that's almost, to bring it full circle, are the Bucks, you know, going to be the beneficiaries of the good fortune that they didn't have last year when Middleton got hurt, with the Celtics kind of front court and defensive like stalwarts being banged up in the same way?
Yeah, I mean, look, I personally think the Bucks are going to come out of the East. As long as they stay healthy, that team, they look like a title team.
Bucks Nuggets, Senate start of the year.
Yeah, still don't think it's going to be the Nuggets.
Yeah, I look, Bucks Warriors. That's what this is what we've been waiting for. Steph versus Giannis. This is the season. It just feels like that's where we're working toward. That's going to do it for today's show, folks. Thank you guys for listening. For Seth Partnow and Moda Keel, I'm Dave DeFore, and this has been Nerder. She wrote on the Athletic NBA show.